Next, we'll hear from Glenn Greenwald, who just won the Online Journalism Award for his coverage of the treatment and the conditions under which Bradley Manding is held. Glenn is a contributing writer at Salon. His political reporting analysis appear in the New York Times, Washington Post, The American Conservative, numerous congressional reports. He's a New York Times best-selling author. His three books are A Tragic Legacy, How a Good Versus Evil Mentality Destroyed the Bush Presidency. He wrote How Would a Patriot Act? And his latest book, Great American Hypocrites, Toppling the Big Myths of Republican Politics. Glenn Greenwald.
Thank you to everybody for coming out today. I've been really enthused by how much interest there is in the WikiLeaks controversy. And the reason for that is because not only is there so much at stake in this conflict, and there is, but also, it is one of the most revealing political controversies that has arisen in quite a long time. And in particular, I think it's extremely revealing about how establishment media outlets and their employees think about their function and think about their role. One of the things that was most striking to me early on about the coverage of WikiLeaks in the American media, and especially in the wake of the release of the diplomatic cables, was that media figures were not only participating in the hostility towards the condemnation of WikiLeaks, they were actually taking a leading role in condemning WikiLeaks and insisting that something should be done. One of the first and most illustrative incidents that I recall was I was watching CNN, which is something I try hard not to do too much, but I was doing it on this day. I think I was traveling and have that as my excuse. And Wolf Blitzer was on, and he was talking about the release of the diplomatic cables that had just happened, and he was absolutely furious. He wasn't furious, of course, about the illegality and deceit and corruption that these cables revealed, that the State Department had ordered spying on UN officials in violation of treaties, or that the U.S. had secretly participated in bombing campaigns in Yemen, contrary to the statements of the State Department, or any of these other things. What he was furious about was that the US government hadn't taken more steps to protect and safeguard this information. What he was basically saying was, I am absolutely outraged that I've learned about these things that the government did. I'm furious that you didn't do a better job of concealing it from me. Which is really quite a remarkable thing for a journalist to admit being angry about. And I actually wrote about it at the time, but as it turned out, that was not a particularly unusual incident. It was to be quite representative of how American media figures thought about WikiLeaks generally. I did lots of shows in the aftermath of the diplomatic cables, and typically the format would be I was on as the designated WikiLeaks defender. And I would typically be on the show with some member of the political class who, of course, was furious that WikiLeaks had breached this confidentiality. And then there would be a media figure who would generally host the discussion or participated in it as well. And what in every single case I found was that it was always two against one. The person who was the designated representative of the political class and the person there posing as the journalist, the actor who plays the role of journalist on television, were saying exactly the same things about WikiLeaks that was completely indistinguishable. Their mindset. I mean, it made sense to me that members of the political class were angry about what WikiLeaks was doing. They want to protect their prerogatives and their power of maintaining secrecy. But the idea that journalists thought exactly the same way and were even angrier about it was, I admit, and perhaps it was a little bit naive, somewhat surprising to me. And the reason it was surprising to me is because what WikiLeaks is doing and what their mission is really what the core of journalism is supposed to be about, which is providing accountability on the world's most powerful factions by exposing the deceitful and wrongful things they do in secret. And, you know, I think we're all well aware of the fact that that isn't really what establishment journalists do. So I wasn't surprised about that, but what surprised me is that they do think it's important to maintain the pretense that that's what they do. And yet here, within the case of WikiLeaks, they weren't even slightly interested in pretending that exposing the secrets of the politically and corporate powerful is something that they value. In fact, they were quite explicit about the fact that they were angry about it. And the other reason why it surprised me, their reaction, and Chris touched on this a little bit as well, is that in the wake of the WikiLeaks releases, it wasn't just a lot of people calling for their prosecution. It was really a consensus in the political class that what WikiLeaks had done was a serious crime and that they ought to be prosecuted. That was pretty much the consensus of Republicans and Democrats alike. And yet, if you were to actually prosecute WikiLeaks for releasing classified information, it would be the very first time in American history that a non-government employee would be prosecuted for releasing classified information. There would be no greater threat imaginable to press freedom in the United States than prosecution of WikiLeaks. And you would think that people who call themselves journalists, who like to think of themselves as being involved in the business of releasing government secrets, would consider that to be a very severe threat, something that they ought to speak out against, and yet they weren't. They were actually joining in the chorus and calling for the prosecution of WikiLeaks, leading the chorus, and that too surprised me. It surprised me because you can pick up the New York Times every day and read government secrets being exposed. Bob Woodward, who is universally adored by everyone in mainstream media outlets, has gotten extremely rich by writing books every year that expose government secrets. Now, these are secrets that government officials want exposed. They're often secrets that reflect well on the government, but it's still the release of classified information in violation of the law. And if you empower the government to prosecute people who do that, you will absolutely give the government immense power over even establishment journalists, and you think that even they would be wary of that, and yet they weren't. And so part of what I tried to do is to understand what it was about them and how they function and reason that led them to this hostility, notwithstanding those things I just described. And I think part of it is obviously just some basic competitiveness, that everybody competes over who gets scoops. In a single year, WikiLeaks was responsible for more scoops, more huge stories than every media outlet in the United States combined. And so there was certainly some competitive jealousy. I think Greg is right that they like to think of themselves as the anointed gatekeepers over the information that the citizenry will learn about, and WikiLeaks had usurped that power, and there was anger over that. But I think the real source of the hostility is the difference between being deferential to political power and being adversarial to it. WikiLeaks, unlike the establishment media, doesn't maintain the pretense of being adversarial to political power. They are actually adversarial to political power. And the difference is not, it's not just that that's not how the American media reacts, it's that American journalists, establishment journalists, identify as part of the political structure, as part of the political culture in Washington. So anything that is adversarial to political power, they find and view as an attack on them as well, because they are a part of that culture. And I think that there's been very few people who have been more helpful in bringing that to light than Bill Keller, the executive editor of the New York Times, who has done his paper a great disservice by doing something executive editors don't usually do, which is he's now speaking out publicly in a variety of forums and therefore revealing how he actually thinks. It was a lot better for the newspaper when he just remained this sort of mysterious figure. But one of the things that he's been doing is he's been running around on this crusade in which he's obsessed with proving to the world that what he does and what WikiLeaks does are radically different. And so one of the ways that he's been doing this, there's a BBC interview where he did this most explicitly, is he's extremely proud of the fact that before publishing any information, the New York Times runs to the Obama administration and clears it first with them. And he actually talked about this in a BBC interview, and the BBC host, and there was also in this debate, a former British ambassador to the UN, were shocked. Not that they were doing this, but that he was admitting it and being so proud of it. And they actually said, are you actually saying that the New York Times, before it publishes information, clears it with the United States government? Like, you're admitting that? And the UN ambassador said, this proves that if you want to actually learn what's going on in the world, you should go directly to the WikiLeaks site and read the cables there and not read the parts that the New York Times has published. And, you know, what really struck me about it is you have to look at these interviews and see just how proud he is of the fact that the Obama administration has been complimentary of how responsible the New York Times has been in these disclosures. And the contrast to me was so great. The great journalist David Halberstam gave a speech at Columbia University to journalism students a year or so before he died. And he said, in talking to these journalism students, that his proudest moment in his career was when he was a young reporter in Vietnam, and he stood up at a press conference and challenged the claims of generals who had been making claims about what had happened in the battlefield that he knew to be false. And he had this enormous conflict, and they tried to intimidate him, and they went to his editors and demanded that he be taken off the story. And his proudest moment was when he stood up to political authority and made them angry and provoked their outrage and objections. Bill Keller's proudest moment is being patted on the head by the Obama administration for good behavior. And that really, I think, signals the American media and what it is. Just one last point about this is, what's so interesting is that even in those rare instances where the U.S. media does actually reveal important secrets about the U.S. government against its will, there's still a great deal of deference exhibited by media institutions. So when the New York Times revealed the Bush administration's warrantless eavesdropping program, it was subsequently revealed that they had actually learned about it a year earlier than they published it, and yet waited until George Bush was safely reelected before telling the American people about it because the Bush administration asked them to do so. And when the Washington Post, when Dana Priest reported, to her credit, it was a great story, that the CIA had maintained a network of secret CIA sites where people were disappeared to, the CIA requested that when she published that, that she not reveal the names of the specific Eastern European countries in which these prisons were located, because if she revealed them, it would jeopardize their ability to continue to operate them. And she complied with that request and withheld the names of those countries to allow these programs to continue. And there was a recent controversy because there was a individual, Raymond Davis, who was detained by Pakistani authorities because he had shot two Pakistani citizens. And the Pakistani press was claiming that he was a CIA agent. And yet Barack Obama came out and said, we demand the release of our diplomat. And the New York Times knew that Raymond Davis was in fact working for the CIA, and yet they concealed that information while reporting Barack Obama's false claims that this was our diplomat in Pakistan. And what this reveals is, and I had a debate about this with Jack Goldsmith, the former Bush official in the Justice Department, who said that this is a good thing that the American media is so deferential to government requests, because what it shows is that we have a patriotic media. That's what he called it. And as I understand it, at least, patriotism, especially for journalists, is not about demonstrating fealty and allegiance to government officials. It's about holding those government officials accountable. And that's what WikiLeaks actually does and why they're so threatening. The journalism professor at NYU, Jay Rosen, has said that they're the first stateless media organization, meaning they have no allegiance to any specific country's government. Their allegiance is to the truth, and that's what has provoked such great hostility among government and media officials alike. I just want to say one point to close this up about the importance of WikiLeaks and why I think it's worth so much focus and attention. The regime of secrecy that is maintained is unquestionably the principal instrument that allows pervasive abuse and lawbreaking. If you look at what has happened in the Bush administration and now in the Obama administration, secrecy is the linchpin of everything that's done. That's why there's been such an attempt to preserve the state secrets doctrine, which when Bush invoked it was so controversial, and yet now Obama administration has embraced it completely to shield executive action from any form of scrutiny, including judicial review. And one of the things that's so interesting about the diplomatic cables that were released, the thousands of diplomatic cables, is that the reaction of the media, as Greg said, was, oh, there's nothing new here. And while that's untrue with regard to a lot of the cables, a lot of them reveal some very important things, it is the case that most of the documents WikiLeaks has released, the overwhelming majority, are in fact quite banal and uninformative and uninteresting and inconsequential. And what's so significant about that is that every single one of those documents, despite being so banal and insignificant, has been stamped secret. Because it shows that what our government does is they reflexively hide behind a wall of secrecy virtually every single thing that they do of any consequence. And WikiLeaks is really one of the very few true threats to the government and corporate consortium that run the government in the national security state and the surveillance state. And that's what makes WikiLeaks so vital, is that what really is at stake is a war over internet freedom, the ability of the American citizenry to remain informed about what their government is doing. And the government realizes that there's no way to stop the technology that enables what WikiLeaks is doing. You could destroy WikiLeaks tomorrow, you could keep Julian Assange in prison for the rest of his life, and overnight there will be all sorts of other models that replicate what WikiLeaks has done. There'll be unquestionably innovations. You cannot stop technologically what WikiLeaks has begun. There's no way for the US government to prevent that. But so what they're interested in doing and what they're obsessed with doing is to create a climate of fear for any would-be whistleblowers in the future or people who want to be the new WikiLeaks. And that's what the unprecedented war on whistleblowers is about, being conducted by the Obama administration. That's the reason why Bradley Manning is being held in solitary confinement and stripped naked and degraded and subjected to inhumane conditions. It's the same reason why the Bush administration tortured people and disappeared people and put them in orange jumpsuits and shackles and showed the world what they were doing. It's a way for the US government to say that our power is unconstrained and unlimited. And if you challenge us or undermine our authority in any way, what we will do to you is without limits, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. And what it's really saying is to all future would-be people who discover government deceit and illegality and who think about exposing, who want to expose it, it's saying to them, before you do that, you should look at what's being done to Bradley Manning and to these people whom we're prosecuting who did the same thing. That's what we can do to you. That's the government strategy for preventing one of the very few avenues that we still have left for learning what the government does, which is whistleblowing and unauthorized disclosures. And if the government succeeds in that, then that one avenue will be extinguished. But if people who are committed to defending transparency and open government defend WikiLeaks and stand up against those efforts, then that transparency can be preserved and it can continue. And that's what I think is at stake. That's why I write so much about WikiLeaks and why I'm so glad that so many people are here to talk about it as well. Thank you very much.
Okay, we only have about 14 minutes. There are a lot of questions.